Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Around 5 minutes into the second half of Ireland's match against South Africa at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, just after Johnny Sexton kicked the penalty to touch from which Ireland ended up scoring their opening try, a supporter rose to his feet, pint of Guinness raised high to the sky as if to say, "Well, Jerry Thorny, what do you think of that?" Immediately after our second try, another fan went one better by raising his very full pint of Guinness in his right hand. Clearly, I just think this punter might have gone before, you know, since halftime. It looked like one that was gotten early stage of second. Anyway, he was lifting his phone high in the sky with his left hand, with the pint in his right, as if to say, "In your face, Simon Hick, if I want to drink a pint and scroll through my social media and cheer a well-worked team try finished by Mac Hansen in the corner all at the same time, well, that's what I'm bloody well going to do." Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Hey, guys.
Hey, Owen, how are you? What a day out that is.
Find you a guy that can do both at once, Owen.
Murph, welcome back from holidays.
Oh, thank you
just
very much.
Time to talk about your specialist subject, swilling pints at Irish sporting events.
That is an outrageous remark. How very dare you?
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
I mean, I may swill a couple beforehand and I swill a few afterwards, but during a sporting event, on, no, it's not very often you actually find me do that.
Well, that's because you're not allowed to bring pints to the seats in Croke Park, as pointed out last week.
No, funny enough,
you're from the country and you don't drive.
Oh, what was the line?
Mainly
here?
Rural. I read that. I did read that. The GFL is mainly rural.
The people who, part of
the IRFU's continuing outreach program.
The people who go to Croke Park are mainly rural who are driving. So said Patrick Power, the commercial officer for the IRFU, to the Irish Times last week.
God, if
sounds
only
like something from a focus group.
Yeah, if only we could get a few dubs into Croke Park. You know, if the GFL have forever based their entire ticketing scheme on. If only we could convince even just like 2,000 dubs to get to Croke Park. That'd really help the old financial coffers of the association.
That's what the GA needs, Murph. A strong Dublin.
Yeah, listen, who are you telling on? Yeah. You know, it's been what now? 2 years?
Yeah, not the drought.
By the time the next quarter final is made, it'll be 3 years.
Jerry has been writing some good stuff on the matchday atmosphere, the lack thereof at Lands End Road, coinciding with one of our best ever runs of form. Among the issues are fans going to and from their seats all game with loads of pints. Simon said last week, put the beers down, put your phone away, support the boys in green. Hence my intro to today's show. We've tweeted images of the two gents in question who reserve the right to take their pints to their seats. And in one case,
they will fight for the right to party.
At all times. We had a suggestion last week that rather than people leaving their seats to get the beer should come to them.
Yes.
In the way it happens in
bring
baseball,
the beer mountain to Muhammad.
Ben Nugent says, I'd like to throw a reason not to introduce a beer delivery service into the mix. A few weeks ago, I went to Roma versus Betis in the Europa League in the Stadio Olimpico. There were young lads going around offering bottles of beer and slices of pizza. I did not avail of the service, but 20 minutes prior to kickoff, the four empty seats next to me were filled by, to my dismay, four Irish lads who were away from there. Why is that? Like, we're Irish people, we get really sad when we meet other Irish people on holidays.
The last people you want to see.
They were away from their wives and kids for a few days. The guy sitting next to me copped that to his unbridled joy, you can get beer and pizza delivered directly to your seat. He then proceeded to have a slice of beer and a pizza delivered directly to his seat at 10-minute intervals. If you've ever seen the episode of The Simpsons with Frank Grimes where Homer swallows food like a duck instead of chewing it, you might be able to picture this scene unfolding. Pizza followed by pine, followed by a cigarette, as you could also smoke. I was covered in crumbs, beer and smoke, despite asking... But he can't be covered in smoke.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Covered
yeah.
in ash.
I actually had a great time at this game. I don't care what this emailer says.
Despite asking him to calm... Oh, he asked him to calm down.
What?
He did actually confront the supporter in question, but it became so intolerable, I left at half time to go to a bar. I'd rather get out of my seat 84 times. It's related to Jerry's supporter who he met, who had to get out 73 times, whatever, then be subjected to this. Please, God, don't introduce beer delivery. That's from Ben. Anyway, it was a good atmosphere on Saturday, one way or the other. Mm. Whether that was through any of the interventions of the RFU or just the fact that we were playing against a really good team and played really well and scored a couple of tries. Yeah.
And it was one of those games where every moment counts. It felt like every ruck was under duress, every pass, that it could be 7 points either end. It was a real tightrope walk. And, you know, there's some games where you play out your patterns or there's a lot of kicking up in the air and teams sort of feeling each other out. It was just from the start, Jesus, they really want to win this.
Yeah.
But also, there isn't you just can't make a mistake, Ireland, or there's trouble.
Jerry's coming into studio to chat along with Shane Horgan. Razzy Rasmus has done another video, you guys. Mm-hmm. Just back after his 6 month ban from the last one. don't worry, this one's only 42 seconds long.
Suitably cowed after his 6 month ban.
Suitably cowed, yeah. He's reduced them now to just 42 second snippets. Tough test match. Thanks for all the support. Also, thanks to the Ireland supporters at the Aviva. You definitely understand the game, and it's great to play in an atmosphere like yesterday. Sure, it was a game of big battles, but small margins, with a finger pointing down to the forward pass and the build-up to the try. Ireland scored. What he fails to note in the video, but he didn't, in fairness, he didn't mention anything about the forward pass. So maybe he was talking about the small margins being that in the same video he posts a link to, you see quite clearly at the start of it, his captain, Sia Khaleesi, neck roll Dan Sheehan.
Yeah.
A yellow / red offence, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I presume that's not why he actually posted it. He wanted people to see the forward pass.
And he's doing that with a ref, the Georgian ref, who's, you know, doesn't have a huge status in the game yet. So it's even easier to put pressure on somebody like that. But it's just so strange that he doesn't just send that to World Rugby or the referee panel or whatever it is, as opposed to out on social media. And it's hilarious that he misses the shit. It shows you just how one idea is, or just how little he's seeing of the other team or his team getting away with things as well.
That you see, yeah, that something has happened. There's been a pretty bad infringement by them in the same passage of play that he tweeted linked to. Listen, this is Razzy Rasmus. We knew the South Africans were going to be physical, let's be honest.
Must have looked like giants to you. That's
yeah, big men.
And as you say, Si,
it's timeless, that one.
They certainly were in the first.
Big men. They were big men. Watching it back on, I was travelling on Saturday, but watching it back, just Peter O'Mahony's incisive commentary just kept replaying.
Can I correct you on something? That clip came up a few weeks ago and you said that I love the way these things just ferment in my brain.
Of course.
You said that I asked Peter O'Mahony in that interview about how big the South Africans were. But no, it was about him as a child seeing them walking around. It wasn't him being impressed by their bulk as a Lions captain.
It doesn't matter anymore.
It was them walking around. It was them walking around near his house years ago, and him seeing these big men.
If the legend becomes fact, print the legend. And as far as I'm concerned, that's Peter O'Mahony's post-match analysis after an Ireland South Africa test match.
Johnny Sexton was talking on Virgin afterwards about coping with the physical side of it.
Yeah, we fronted up. We always front up. It's just the intricacies of our game that can be exposed sometimes when we don't quite get it right. And, you know, I suppose we didn't play at our best, but sometimes they don't let you and they make things very difficult for you. You know, they're in our World Cup pool, so we're going to meet again in 12 months' time. And in a neutral venue, we obviously had an amazing crowd here today, which always helps. So neutral venue next time, it'll be one hell of a game.
I think the way Sexton, just at the start of that answer, the way he framed it is quite smart. It's not as though, well, maybe Razzy Rasmus did call us soft or whatever, but in general, it's not that we've got a bunch of wimps on the team who aren't physically capable of standing up for themselves against the powerful teams. It's that when you're playing those teams, it's very hard to continue to play your rugby. Obviously, you do have to front up physically, all that kind of stuff. But as he says, the problem is often then also trying to play your rugby around that. So there's different ways of feeling the pressure from a physical team. And we didn't seem to fall into either of those traps this week.
Yeah, I love that we, obviously in the first half, particularly in the first 20 minutes, we did all the physical stuff, kind of get our heads down and just worked really hard and put our bodies on the line. But then the normal pattern then is you get into that sort of battle mode. This happens in all sports, happens in GA and soccer as well. You're sort of under pressure, you're defending. It's very hard to switch then into attack. And the Hansen try sort of epitomizes that into a few seconds, that That was it. We're battling in a ruck. I know it bounced out through Sheehan's foot. That was a league, and there was also Ford Passner. But just in terms of Ireland's psychology, that so we're battling in in a physical battle there. But then that Doris immediately switches to sort of a smart, skillful, but also back in his own skill, back in his own creativity, back in his teammates to be there with him. That there's an opportunity here. It's not just I'll pick up the ball and we go into a tackle. And the whole team switched on. And it's either Murray Kinsler or Rory O'Connor tweeted that Gibson Park immediately spotted. So he's in the backfield and he's immediately pointing to the players outside him. He's immediately seeing that there might be a gap in midfield. And then everybody times it from there on. They time their passes perfectly, their run perfectly. Gibson Park obviously takes on a gap up through midfield. But it's that switch from battle mode to skillful and calm and composed and seeing where the space is.
Hansen was talking afterwards.
Ireland very rarely do the two.
Hansen was talking afterwards about, and there's a couple of Hansen quotes actually, I'll put one to the guys, but another one was that he talked about how I think that he says I've got a license to roam and try and fit in wherever I can, even though I've got 11 or 14 on my back. Talks about how you're encouraged to express yourself, play your game. That's exactly what you want to hear when you're running up the pitch, which we know that is the case. You can see that's the case, but it's always nice to have your thoughts confirmed by the people actually playing.
Yeah, and well, a roaming role in rugby is extremely rare anyway. And then for an Ireland team to do it against, I still think that Shane Horgan thinks France are the best defence in the world. I think France technically have the best defence in the world and maybe the best structures, but South Africa have the biggest, hardest, most aggressive defence. And that poses, to me, as many problems. So that if we still stick with that, and Hansen found yards at a time when Ireland really were struggling to do anything. And I thought himself, McCloskey, actually, the very first time he got the ball, Balakoon, they didn't get much ball, but when they did get it, McCloskey, there was a man right on him and he managed to just get his feet out of the way and made like 10 yards, 10 like vital yards. And the same with Hansen, he kept cutting in field. I know he made one mistake at one point, but it's just when you need your skillful, fast guys to be composed and still back themselves, even when the forwards are in such a battle, it was really impressive. And I don't know. I just feel like that goes along with the confidence that Farrell and Cat give the team. There's one thing to give a license to roam. There's another thing to have the confidence and give your players the confidence to do it.
Murph, don't worry. Despite the front row gaining parity in the scrum and the second row doing all the donkey work and the halfback combination being excellent. And
just tell me,
Of course it was a back row player of the match.
You knew I had no fear.
Josh Van der Fleer, yeah.
Of course.
It wasn't in between. It was him, Doris. There was nobody else in the equation Irish television.
The rugby coverage should now do what the Sunday game used to do, which is have like the three contenders out of the match. But it just be the three back rowers every game.
So and the back row replacement, if you have to put
which one of the three have we got?
If we're talking about Ireland trying to overcome psychological baggage around the World Cup, this win has obviously helped towards that. What about Reese McLenaghan winning Ireland's first ever world gymnastics gold to put his Olympic disappointment to bed? McLenaghan was quite emotional on the BBC afterwards. He basically couldn't speak. He was just struggling to put his achievement into words. But he's usually a very good talker. That's normally not a problem for him. I'm confident with a few days to think about it, he will deliver a great interview when he calls into the second captain's studios during the week to have a catch up with us. A lot's happened in the couple of years since we've last spoken to Reese McLennan, which would have been well pre-Olympics.
As Mary Hannigan said in the Irish Times today, it's very hard to be humble when you're number one in the world at rugby and gymnastics.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Secondcaptains.com, £5 a month plus VAT if you want to hear that one.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Wow. working much better today. Back for Arki, change of direction. Stockdale. Now the race is on. The bounce is Stockdale.
Ireland have turned up today and they have come up with something special. A lovely switch play of the tail of the line out. It went back to Stockdale, who still had a lot of work to do. There's the switch. Arki. Stockdale, it's him and Aaron Smith, he gets the bounce, still had a bit to do to get...
The 80 minutes is up, Ireland by 16-9, having to defend, having to get back on side, back here for New Zealand. TJ Perenara got us that one. TJ Perenara with the kick, moves it to Moonga. It's knocked down by Bloody McCulloch, the referee has blown the full-time whistle. Ireland have beaten New Zealand.
I have seen every single thing I want to see at a rugby match at dear old Lansdowne Road.
Bodie Retallick drops it cold! It's over! It's over! Ireland! Ireland defeat the All Blacks for the first time on home soil! World number two knocks off world number one! What a test match!
The world's number one team beats the world champions. Shane Horgan. Jerry's already smiling here. Shane Horgan, how are you?
Oh, I haven't stopped smiling.
And the man whose provocative articles stung the Aviva crowd into life at long last. Jerry Thorney, how are things?
Glad to make my little contribution.
Ah, indeed, to Irish rugby. I do want to talk about that later on, but let's not necessarily start there. I'm going to start with a Mac Hansen quote, Shane. When we're doing our things right, we know there's not a team that can handle what we're doing. So we've just got to keep sticking to our key principles and we'll end up coming out on top. Whoa, I tell you, I mean, that's good confidence. Is that the right tone to be striking at this stage?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the right tone is. They keep on winning. They can strike any tone they want, you know. And clearly there is that's a product of an ingrained belief in their own ability. And I think that's really important. And do you have to have a bit of swagger? Do you have to have a bit of arrogance? Yeah, probably. Does that always mean and translate into success? And for Ireland, no, it doesn't. But I think we're all in the same situation, right? The problem is we've won this game. It was an important game for us. I said it last week. I'm very glad they won it. We can go into the way they won it, which I think is important as well and positive. But immediately, I'm thinking World Cup. Yeah. Everything that's going on now is in relation to the World Cup. Maybe the Six Nations will be slightly different because it's its own competition and you want to win that, potential Grand Slam and all that. But everything now, every utterance from the camp, every performance, everything that goes on, you're viewing it in terms of a World Cup. So, you know, macro position, is that result good for, you know, our prospects in the World Cup? I think it is. I said last week, if we don't beat South Africa under these circumstances, when will we beat them? So I think, you know, we've ticked that box, and I think there's a belief in that. We've also been exposed to that type of super rush defense that no other team in the world shows us. But you know, whatever messaging comes out of the camp, whatever, you know, language that Mac Hansen is using or anybody else, ultimately, we don't know until we get to that World Cup, and we'll find out is that mindset the one that works and finally breaks the hoodoo. You got to give these guys some credit that what they're doing at the moment is working and has been for a while. So I'm not necessarily one to second guess them.
I feel like Ireland need to lose a game at some stage, Jerry. Maybe just to take this thing out of things, but South Africa is probably not the one to lose.
That's very funny you should say that, because I had that one conversation with one person last Saturday before the game, and that was Shane Horgan. Saying, do we really want to win every game going up to this next World Cup? That's nervy. But then again, I'd really like them to beat South Africa at home. Oh, and I'd like to beat England and France at home as well. They'd be the most relevant big wins. Then so where are we going?
Wales. We'll take a defeat to Wales this one time.
Will we? Okay.
Yeah.
Or Italy. That'd be nice.
Yeah. I still want to win the Six
Wales
Nations.
Only win the Six Nations.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think it might not have a huge amount of relevance next September when Ireland plays South Africa. That in terms of Ireland winning, but I think it would have had a huge relevance if Ireland had lost, given what South Africa threw at Ireland. If you'd said before the game that so the Springboks were going to have five line-out mauls in the Irish 22 in the first half, that we were going to lose Stuart McCloskey, who was playing very well, and Jimmy O'Brien was going to have to come in at 13 with Gary Ringrose slipping inside to 12, and then that we were going to lose Tyke Furlong at half-time. I'd say if everybody knew that bit of information before the game, they probably would have thought Ireland are probably going to lose this match. Mm. And the fact that they won shows how much more adaptable this team is, maybe, the Rob Kearney point he was making in Virgin Media, than 4 years ago at the World Cup.
So you can actually learn lessons while you're winning a match as well. Exactly. That's basically what we're saying here.
And Ireland are not swinging from the roofs. The celebrations on the pitch were quite muted. I doubt they were in the dressing room, but on the pitch they were quite muted. And I think that that will give them confidence that they can deal with this blitz defence. Also knowing that they actually didn't play their best. Like in the first half, they went to the edges. It was like watching the game of roulette. Like South Africans, the line speed was ridiculous. Damien De Allende, Jesse Creel, Johnny being very brave, just offloading at the last minute, and Gary Ringrose through that hole. But once Johnny threw a pass too high, I think it was for Jimmy O'Brien on the edge. Another time, Jimmy O'Brien threw a pass too high for Mac Hansen on the edge. And another time, Johnny floated out a lovely long pass that Robert Balakun could have been a bit flatter on. So they left chances to get to those edges behind, but they kept trying to play their rugby. And then the two tries, the build-up to the first try, the line-up maul, and the second try especially, was the high point of the game, and actually showed that this team has an ability to play off-the-cuff rugby, I think more so than the team of 4 years ago. And that was really pleasing to watch that try again, and all the different players that contributed out of position, a lock at scrum half, a lock on the edge, you know, Gibson Park, second, the two props combining. I just thought it was a superb try.
Yeah, and Jerry, what you said there, I think is crucial, and maybe the most important thing with an eye on the World Cup is Ireland didn't play their best, and they came out on top against the world champions. This idea of Ireland going into the World Cup and having to deliver throughout the campaign, you know, no matter how many games they play, deliver their maximum performance every game is not going to happen. That's not going to happen. It doesn't happen for any team that wins the World Cup because it's impossible. So what you have to do is you have to be in a position where you win the games you're expected to win as easily as you can. And that means with as little effort, as little stress, probably as little injury profile as possible. You then have to win and probably a couple of games in a not dissimilar fashion to what we saw at the weekend, where the opposition are quality. You can't deliver everything that you want in your game plan. You have to grind it down. You have to maybe ride your luck or hold in the opportunity for the opportunity to do what you want to do at some period in game, to have that, get to that purple patch where you're, you know, in touch or, you know, drawn game or one score behind or one score ahead. You then grasp that purple patch or that the couple of moments that are shown up to you, or you exploit a mistake from the opposition. And then you win a game like that. And then, you know, the icing on the cake is that you get one of those games where you deliver almost the perfect performance. And, you know, my mind goes back to the last World Cup was England versus New Zealand. You know, that wasn't far off a perfect performance to them. Now, we knew that, well, we didn't know, but we found out they couldn't deliver back-to-back perfect performances because, you know, it's very difficult. There's lots of factors in play there, including the emotional energy that's expanded when you deliver a performance that that higher quality. So you have to find this other way to win. And I'm actually almost as buoyed by this type of performance where they did have stuff that didn't go wrong. In the air, they weren't great. They actually, you know, they didn't gather as well as they should. Their offensive kicking game wasn't great. We had a goal kick success rate of 60%. That's not good enough. Our tackle rate was 83%, probably less than you'd like. And we gave away, was it 9 penalties? Okay, 10 penalties. Not bad. Not bad. But then there was other areas that were good. Like we had 100% scrums won on our own feet. That's very important against South Africa. And we had a line out at 92%, which is quality as well. So, you know, we did enough and we had enough quality elements to our game to win that and, you know, and stay in a position that we could win the game while having definite areas that weren't as good as they could be and should be.
Shane, how worried were you after sort of 15, 20 minutes when they just were coming at us and we couldn't really get any of our attacking phases going? But also, was there a bit of you thinking, we just need to survive here, and if we do, this thing will ease off?
I was getting a bit frustrated, and I was concerned because I was thinking, you know, how do we counter what South Africa are doing? Because, you know, within that wave after wave in the 22, there's probably, I think I said it on commentary, there's a couple of ways that you can stop that, or there's a couple of ways that that ends. One is in a try for South Africa. One is a penalty conceded, and that's 3 points. The other is a turnover from South Africa getting a little bit loose. And then the final way is almost just attritionally just holding in there and holding in until a ball gets knocked on or you know, South Africa sort of run out of steam. And in many ways, the first two options are the much more likely against the South African team. So I thought we gave them too much time in our 22. When we exited, we didn't exit, you know, deep enough. We didn't, and we let them back into our area, you know, too quickly. And then you give them that time and ultimately, you know, think they should score. They didn't. South Africa didn't take as many opportunities in our 22 as they should. They had some poor kicking as well themselves. And I was surprised at that. But I did say to Jamie, I don't know, it must have been whatever, is it 20 minutes in, and I'm looking at the scoreboard. I said, is this still 3-3? You know, is it, how is this still the case? And that then gave me hope. I'm not sure if I expected the game to sort of unfold as it did, but you know, in the second half, where I thought Ireland were, you know, much the better side, actually. I thought they were much the better side in the second half. But what really impressed me was that try that Jerry spoke to, that the quality of that. This whole performance reminded me a little bit of an All Blacks, you know, performance in some ways, in that, you know, Ireland had less possession, less territory than the opposition, but actually in the couple of moments of real quality, the line-out maul being one, and then that try, you thought, okay, this is, you know, this is the difference between the sides. And the fact that the first three players in possession for that try were all forwards and offloading the ball really well. And there was a beautiful, you know, sort of pass slash offload from Tadhg Byrne a little bit further out. And then just the backs doing really well. And I know Jimmy O'Brien, it just seemed like a standard pass, but he drew and passed really well under a lot of pressure. You know, that was the standout difference. There was a moment that Ireland could deliver quality, and they did.
Jerry, we've had tough teams in the past, Ireland, and we've had skillful teams in the past. I'm not sure I've ever seen us marry the two against such a brilliant opposition before.
You're talking about Ireland, Irish teams of the past.
And sometimes it's all wrapped up in one player. Like, say, Tadhg Byrne, he's tough when he needs to be, and then he's skillful when he needs to be. And it's like obviously a physical transformation, but it's also like a psychological one of being like unbelievably brutal and just getting your head down and working hard. And then it's, no, I need to be subtle and calm and composed here.
Yep. I see where you're coming from entirely. And for me, another player really epitomises that is Gary Ringrose. Yeah. Like, if you look at him, the build-up to that try we're talking about, I don't think he touches the ball once, but he has a material effect on two rucks that are absolutely vital. He gets down and dirty, rolls his sleeves up and contributes to the cause. And then, you know, he started the game at 13, did well, then he comes into 12 and does really well there. And then in that passage of play, in the lead-up to the Maul try, he stepped in as out half, effectively. And it's actually his footwork over the gain line that gets Franco Muster offside. So he, I think, is a great amalgam of that kind of unstinting teamwork, punching physically above his weight, and also playing like the class player he is. Yeah, I'd say that's one of the most bravest wins in many ways, not just in heroic defence and physicality. We've seen that before from Irish teams, but in the way they kept trying to play their brand of rugby as well. Yeah. So I think there is an amalgam of the two
that,
there.
That Caelan Dyers at the start of the Hansen try went, not only am I sort of plucking up a ball here, I've been under immense pressure.
Yeah.
I'm aware, and then I'm going to back my skills and also back my teammates to be in the right place for this.
Yep. And then you think of the build-up. That was an astonishing piece of play by Dyers, who, again, always has a class game. So he's such an athlete. To have the presence of mind to keep that ball in play to Josh, and know Josh van der Fleer was there, and hit him with an offload off the deck before he tackled into touch, was in many ways the key moment of that brilliant try. And you think of the way that they reacted to Sexton being down, being treated for injury for maybe 5-6 phases, and different players, particularly Ringrose, also Hansen, others going in as first receiver. And that beautiful little no-look behind the back pass for Gibson Park, where Mike Hansen goes through the hole. That was really This is a wonderful heads up rugby team to watch. They're good to watch as well as the fact they were.
I honestly don't think we give that enough credit. I know we talk about World Cups and are we building and what's job is Andy Farrell doing? Just how brilliant they are to watch. Like, how many Irish teams in any sport have been both really successful, number one in the world, and look amazing? Like, we're the most entertaining team probably in the moment in the world.
Possibly. Yeah, it's extraordinary. And against Fiji next Saturday should be quite a feast of rugby by comparison. Polar opposite to last Saturday. Pity it's on at 1 p.m. on a Saturday. But yeah, I do think this team is more capable of reacting to stuff on the pitch or the way a match is going than a lot of Irish teams in the past.
I am wary of overdoing it, though. Like, you know, and I don't want to Schmidt here and stuff like that. But I think after a big win, we sometimes do have a habit of doing this, though. So, like, overdoing it.
We're going to get to that. We need to talk first about how well they've done, and we are going to get to the fact that the tone from Sexton and Farrell and the players, and Jerry's even touched on it already. Very muted, very calm, very like, this is the start of something. This is absolutely
Had very entertaining wins in the past. I mean, Ireland, England at Twickenham for the Grand Slam, for example, as entertaining as smart and as abrasive as any of that as well. I just sometimes...
A lot of that was...
I'm just trying to temper things here. I feel Simon's going to start predicting a World Cup.
No. Look, I'm just saying, let's celebrate what we have at the moment, which is a very successful team that's just won 10 matches in a row at home. And if they win the next two of the series, we'll equal the all-time winning record at home by an Irish side. I think they've won 14 of their last 16 or 15 of the last 17, they're number one in the world. They won a series away to the All Blacks. And you know that if they had lost last Saturday, what the narrative would be now? Oh, they can't stand up to the physical bullies. They'll always be bullied. And that's it. The All Blacks series was a false stunt. Ah, typical Ireland. They're peaking in between World Cups. The whole night, you can imagine what the narrative would have been. So I'm glad they won with loads of caveats that they can improve upon as well.
Yeah. And I'll put this to you, is that, you know, there's the La Rochelle, there's Saracens, there's losing to England, there's losing to these bigger teams, France, from Leinster and Ireland, France over the last few years. And if you do another one of those, then in the heads of the likes of James Ryan, who constantly gets doubted, for example, in these performances, they go, well, maybe we can't actually do it against the big teams.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that necessarily, you know, is front of mind, but is there something residual there in the subconscious? I'm not sure. Maybe it is, but, you know, let's remove it. You know, and this does help. If it is there, it will be removed. I get what you're saying, Owen, as well. And there is the other thought that creeped into my head, is that where is this South African side actually? And in terms of their development, and what are they like in comparison to what they were, 3 years ago with the World Cup, and even against the Lions. But maybe not the teams are figuring them out, but what that South Africa do, and what South Africa tried to do against Ireland, is intimidate them in two ways. There's the physical intimidation that is difficult to live up to. The level of one out runners they bring with massive carriers, one after another. You know, low risk, low mistake, very attritional. A perfect kicking game generally, which was not the case. And they kicked at 40%. So just have that in the back of our mind as well. But the sort of line speed that we saw them deliver in many ways effectively in the first half and for periods in the second half, was they're trying to intimidate you out of playing an attacking, ambitious game. And it took Ireland a little while to get to grips with that, which is not unsurprising, because they don't come across that line speed maybe ever. And but what I was really encouraged by was the fact that they stayed with it and started making decisions when there was a little bit more fragmentation in the line, that, you know, the wingers were coming a little too far in, they weren't numbering off on the right men. There was too big a gap between the defenders, so there was genuine elbows there. And there's always a little bit of fatigue. People aren't operating in quite the same way in the second half. But Ireland were canny enough to, you know, start taking those elbows, those little chinks in the line, or identify a little, hold the pass a little bit and throw a better ball over the top instead of the really, you know, we saw that Jerry mentioned it earlier, that's just that it was just sort of like fecked over the top and hoped that someone would pick it up. So, I know that side of things was very encouraging for Ireland, but, you know, is that South Africa, are teams more aware of that defence? Yes, they are. Is it, you know, will they improve and will they refine that by the World Cup? I think that they will. And then we know you deal with a unique pressure in the World Cup, that that type of defense is very effective against, because, you know, no matter what you want to say, and yes, there was some pressure in that game, and Ireland probably had more pressure to deliver a performance at home than a South African team, but it's nothing in comparison to the kind of pressure and anxiety that comes at a World Cup. So how do Ireland deal with it, and can they deal with it? That test is still to be found, because I do think South Africa will deliver that and more at World Cup time.
One thing I loved about the match is that in the build-up to it, both head coaches were asked, oh, will you be keeping your powder dry ahead of the World Cup? And they didn't keep their powder dry, either of them. Mm-hmm. They both threw their best game at each other, and which is going to give them loads to pour over in the video between now and Paris in September. But I love the fact that, okay, we're viewing everything in the prism of the World Cup, but we should enjoy and celebrate a great day and a great win between that lived up to its billing. You know, world number one against world champions. It might be the most titanic struggle of the whole November window. And it just should be acknowledged as a great win in that respect. But, like, yeah, with all the caveats that Shane talks about, for sure, you wonder if Damien Williamson will ever play number 10.
Well, this is a big thing, right? And I know we talked about how South Africa need to add certain layers to their game, but then they bring in this more running out half, this threat, and he was he had a shocker, really.
He had a shocker.
He wasn't kicking all around, all of it, nothing.
The missed penalty to touch, the shank three-pointer in front of the post. Pollard doesn't make those mistakes. Pollard doesn't miss that conversion that Colbe missed. And the difference in the team when they brought on Willy Leroux was transformative. Now, admittedly, there were two scores down by then, so they didn't know other option. But they showed they actually can play rugby and play with width. And, you know, they got a couple of good scores, particularly the one Etzebeth was ridiculous.
Yeah.
How good was he?
Oh, that offload is so good for a man.
He's playing the best rugby of his life still. I think he made 18 tackles. Yeah. And you know that one when he was hauled back? He'd have gone the length, probably.
Yeah. He's got gas once he gets going as well.
He was outstanding, arguably the best player on the pitch. But so I do think that it's very relevant in terms of the World Cup, but it's also relevant in the here and now. And, you know, it was a really great day at the EB Stadium.
I do think they're a nightmare to have in a pool, though. I know we don't absolutely have to beat them, but just the idea of those collisions, the injuries,
it has echoes of France. It has echoes of France in 2015 in the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff. Like, Ireland won that bruising final pool game to claim the tool, but they lost their five best players, arguably. You know what I mean? And you don't want carnage like that after a World Cup meeting either. Is it the second meeting? I think it's second or third.
I think it's third.
Yeah.
And also, the reason we don't have to necessarily win is we could... You don't know if you want to actually win that pool or not. You might end up playing France or New Zealand. It depends what happens in their pool. The World Cup's another...
But then again, you can't take it as a fait accompli that Ireland are definitely going to win their other matches.
That's true.
Scotland.
Sorry to our Scottish listeners there. We're going to them in a later day. Shane, you want to come in?
Just in that context, or relevant to that conversation, is I thought the bench did really well as well. I know Conor Murray started, Jemison Gibson-Park came on, didn't have a perfect performance because I thought his kicking was a little bit off, but other elements of his games, the stuff he's good at, he was very, very good at. Rob Herring came in at a tricky time, and there was two core line-out throws.
That last line-out throw, Shane, was
right
brilliant.
At the end, there was monstrous pressure on
monstrous,
you know.
And he figured out he had to float it in between two South African pods into Jack Coleman's arm. It was brilliant.
It was really good. I was like, how, you know, that probably should go to two, you know, under any circumstances. Mm. But I think there's too much pressure at two. So he challenged himself, the team challenged themselves, and, you know, caught a perfect, almost an easy catch, put Ireland in a really good position. So that was really good.
Finlay Beelam. Time to come a bit of slack, isn't it? Yep.
Scrum was very solid. Now,
Did he get lucky in a couple?
Well, he did. I think the first one was lucky, but I thought after that he was showing a good picture to the referee. It didn't look as if they were getting absolutely screwed, and that's almost enough. Those optics are enough, and those optics are important for World Cup time as well. It's these things. You know, if that scrum Ireland, if Ireland still win, but Ireland's scrum gets monstered in that last 20 minutes, that is in the head of every coach, every referee around the world. I don't care what you say; it just is. He's still a bit of work to do in the carrying, because our props have set a new standard for holding the inside defenders and passing the ball. So he's a bit to do there. But how he delivered on that was really good. Jack Conan coming in for Oman, again seamless and positive. Jimmy O'Brien,
wow!
Listen,
yeah.
Hats off, yeah, mate. Like, that is a horrible ask. A horrible ask at first. I know you were keen in your first cap, but yeah, and you want to get out in the pitch, but do you want to get out under those circumstances? Yeah. I thought it's huge. They've got, you know, big carriers. Ireland are very, as we know, sort of formative in the way that they attack as well. So it's not like a lot of, you know, do your own thing. It's very process driven and systematic. He had to fit into that position, the position that he's not massively comfortable with. Yeah. His skill level is really high. He got in with, I think, three really, really crucial kicks. And that, you know, left foot was very positive for Ireland. You know, what a performance from him. You know, everybody who was asked to deliver delivered, and you know, that's not you know, Ireland have a little bit more depth as well. You know, they are missing a couple, and there's also a couple of guys that were underdone that haven't played a lot of rugby. So that is another, you know, big positive from Ireland. And you know, I think, you know, we need to have a sort of bit of a check ourselves as well in the sort of commentariat. Sometimes you think, you know, we've got, you know, big players who are going well on the pitch, and we go, oh, you know, what's this move being made for? It's being made because coaches have a trust in the squad, and they have probably a deeper knowledge of those players and what's going on. And we can't, you can't any longer, you know, consistently win high level test matches without having a bench that performs.
Except out half shame, they still don't trust Joey. 77 minutes.
Well, I think maybe Joey's not injured. I think that's, and I'm, listen, Joey is under pressure, right? He's under pressure, and I don't know what the selection will be next week.
Was Jack Crowley the waterman as well?
I feel as if they've lost a little bit of faith there. I think they've lost a little bit of faith, and I think they're looking for another solution. I think the emerging Ireland tour to South Africa was a big part of that. Big part of that was to get tens with game time. And I think what they were looking, I think they were looking at Frawley after the summer. Frawley was injured. He didn't get to do that. He had, he had a sort of a relatively average game in a very, very poor performance overall for the A team the night before. But I think Ireland are looking for a different alternative to Sexton at 10 at the moment.
I think Joey Carby will start against Fiji, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think he will.
I think he will as well, but in different circumstances, I'm not sure. And he needs to actually deliver a performance, because it's been a long time since he has for Ireland.
What about Razzy Erasmus? Jerry, I saw he put another video out. You're hanging your head already. You know, just mentioning, just pointing out, it was a game of big battles and small margins, with a video accompanying the tweet. Another video showing what was quite possibly a forward pass in the build-up to the try. There was also what seemed a very clear neck roll by his captain, Sia Khaleesi, in the same clip that he sent on, which maybe he didn't notice.
It's funny how he never notices anything.
Well, this happened in the Lions tour. Like, in the videos he was showing, there was literally other infringements doing wrong.
What's the common denominator here? South Africa lost both times. Mm. And it's all the injustices against the Springboks. It's almost as if, in Razzy's eyes, the Springboks, because they're world champions, are just a divine right to beat the Lions and a divine right to beat Ireland. I think it's pathetic, really.
Do you not enjoy it? Andrew Trimble was on last week saying he quite likes all the Razzy kind of stuff.
Yeah, to some degree. He's captivating. I went to the press conference last week. You can ask him lots of questions. I even asked him, do you still think Ireland are soft? And he kind of more or less said, yeah, they were then, they're not now, more or less. They were technically a very good team, but a little soft. So he stood by his comments. He said, I think his opening answer was, yeah, I thought I might get asked that.
He agrees with Johnny Sexton, so, who said a couple of years ago we would have crumbled.
Yes, that's true. And they might well have done. Mm. Might well have done. But I think Razzy, I don't want to give it too much more oxygen than it deserves.
No, there was the Colby.
The global conspiracy against the Springboks continues. Yeah. The World Rugby, their minions at work again, influencing the referees around the world to stop South Africa achieving the success that they might otherwise, you know. Can you imagine what they would achieve beyond the World Cup victory and the Lions Tour victory if everybody wasn't against?
Well, the referee in the TMO obviously didn't get the memo, I think, when they judged that Colby spear tackle to only be a yellow card. Surely that had to be a
red. We did a piece in the Irish Times about the South African media reaction and all the perceived injustices against South Africa on the day by the referees. The Colby yellow card that could have been red was not mentioned anywhere. Mm. You look back in the video, you can find things that went against both sides. Yes, Johnny Sexton's inside pass to Mac Hansen was clearly forward. Ireland got away with one there. But, like, Etzebeth knocked on at the line-out before half-time. None of the officials spotted it. It should have been a scrum Ireland. And one I really thought was completely wrong. Shane, if you freeze frame the last penalty in injury time of the first half against Ireland, the Colby knocks over to make it 6-6. I freeze framed it, and I cannot for the life of me see one Irish player offside. It's a perfect straight line behind the hindmost foot. And interestingly, it was called by Matthew Raynal, but no number was given as to the offside. There was no offside. It was actually a very bad call.
The Colby one was, I thought, the Colby one, the referee said that it's a yellow card. He landed on his back is one of the points that was being made here, which he landed on his back eventually after first landing on his hand and his elbow and his head and his neck.
Yeah.
And then eventually lands on his back. So just factually, the way that was discussed between himself
force.
And the
it wasn't one of these force. Where you land him carefully. There was an attempt to push him towards the ground.
I got to confess, I feel a little bit hypocritical about this. A girl made a very good point to me in Lansdowne Clubhouse afterwards. Yes, should he have got a red card, but you're saying you're glad he didn't. Yeah, I am actually, because of... If he got a red card, the whole win and the whole occasion, the whole day would have been devalued, wouldn't it? Yes. Yeah. If we're talking about protecting players.
Yeah, I think you have to.
You have to.
I'm not sure.
If the rules are red.
The red card.
You didn't think so,
I thought yellow was just about right, just because of the force, the force into the ground, and there was sort of back and then head. So I kind of felt that. I would have felt maybe a bit of an injustice.
I don't think there was back and then head, though. That's what I'm saying. The head hit the ground before the back hit the ground. And the head might hit the ground a bit harder if he didn't get his hand and his elbow down there first as well.
Left in a very vulnerable position.
Yeah,
I also wonder.
It wasn't smart by Colby, but you know, I think this conversation comes to that rugby is an imperfect game in terms of refereeing, and yes, there is different areas of even different readings of or interpretations of the laws. There's also so much going on in rugby games that. The referees may miss it, and we can all, especially with massive backroom teams that all these nations have at the moment, can pinpoint decisions that were incorrect against your team. Right, that can happen, but we as the rugby community have to understand that is actually that level of imperfection is part of what rugby is, and I really can't stand Razzie doing this, and I've kind of lost it's so petulant for him. He's this man of incredible stature, like incredible charisma. He's one of the leading lights in world rugby. He's a outstanding career. Winner of the World Cup, turned it around for South Africa, even more remarkably, turning that around for South Africa in that couple of years before the World Cup, winning a Lions series, and I just don't think it shows him in a very good light at all, and I don't know why. I do know why he would do it,
which is the pressure referees in future matches.
No,
exactly.
It worked.
Against
the Lions, it worked. There was a marked change in the way the refereed the last two tests. They were intimidated.
They were
petrified. They were overly cautious. All the time they were taking to make every decision. So it worked in to their advantage. And he is doing similar now. He has literally not learned, or not that he learned. He probably has learned from what went on. But the fact that he received the ban, it hasn't made any impact on him. And that kind of faux well done. Tweeting or
well done to the Irish fans. Yeah,
I love the Irish for close calls, but look at these, I'm just throwing it out there. It's embarrassing. It's like, come on, would you have a bit more about yourself? Have that also almost have the sort of dignity that your office holds, that the position that you hold in world rugby, this is not the route you should be going down, but it seems he's, unwilling not to. And this is his modus operandi now. And it's, by the way, it's not going to change, is it? It's not going to change.
One other thing I just want to go back to on the game, if that's okay, Jerry, and it struck me that our defensive maul was absolutely brilliant against the best maul in the world. Yeah. I don't think there's any debate about that. And there's so many games where mauls are almost just automatic tries for teams like Saracens or South Africa, and you watch them, they get a 5-meter line out and you can almost chalk up the 7 points. When that doesn't happen to a team like South Africa, and Paul O'Connell I think is getting most of the credit here, maybe all the credit, along with James Ryan and the rest of them, but that if you can stop a team like South Africa, if your defensive maul is that good, it takes away one of their weapons, but also their kind of psychological thing of, we get the penalty, we kick to the corner, we get the try, almost like that's the way it works for us. Because they don't have incision, let's be honest. They don't know how to put their centres through holes. They don't know how to use their amazing wingers, really.
Nope.
Besides like high kicks and knockdowns. They don't know how to put people into space as well as France or Ireland or New Zealand. So when you stop that, man, it's a psychological blow to them.
Yes, it takes away an energy source for them because the whole foundation stones of their wins are based on bullying the opposition at scrum and or maul time. And it was extraordinary to see the first happen once and then a second time, then a third time, a fourth time. Ireland not contesting, just forming this perfect shield and immovable. It was like the boxer scrummaging against the wall. Extraordinary performance. And I think it really was, above all else, actually, the foundation stones for the victory. Because if those mauls start creeping backwards and the South Africans score a try off them, it's a completely different match. And as I said at the very start, if you'd been said beforehand that Ireland or that South Africa were going to have five penalties into the Irish 22 to set up mauls, and the first four were going to be almost held, immovable, and then the pressure on Elsbeth at the front helps to steal the last one.
The speed that the Irish, they didn't contest, the speed at which they hit the guy who just landed.
Yeah.
It's not just form of block.
They got the timing wrong once. I think Beelum or someone, the props, or was a Porter, got penalised with further out.
Yeah, for dragging it down, yeah.
Yeah, he actually went in on the jumper before he landed and just got the timing. But you're right.
It's millisecond stuff. You've got to get it right, yeah.
Obviously, the technical detail and all of that and the work in the training ground with Paul O'Connell is phenomenal. Yeah. But the timing of those were all perfect. And then, of course, if you'd said beforehand that South Africa were going to have four line-up mauls in the Irish 22, not score off one of them, and Ireland were going to get one and score off it, yeah. I don't think anybody would have believed it was possible.
Well, after that try, I think Van der Vleer was the only person of the 50,000 that thought it was a try.
I wrote that very thing. Yeah. Nobody, if you watch it again, and it reminded me of the time, nobody thought that was a try. Yeah,
I thought one or two of his teammates did. Or else they were quite convinced. The ones who were really close had
so maybe it was planned because...
Could have been. A couple of the teammates
looked
really
so
convinced.
Naive. It's like, obviously don't roll towards the touchline, you know?
No, and it was... But it seemed to have been a deliberate tactic because if you notice in the coach's box, Simon Easterby just gives Paul O'Connell a pat on the back as if I don't know maybe
it, so maybe it was yeah.
I still laugh at that O'Driscoll try against France, Shane.
It was very like it.
The one where there was never a try and he gave it the most unconvincing.
There was definitely a few. I saw Finlay Beelum was at the front and he was like, you know, arms in the air, going, you can't know whether this is a try or not. There's not a chance. You know, you're right to highlight those. The ability to stop the rolling maul and it was off every line out, I think, almost from South Africa. So, you know, maybe they will have a little bit more, you know, when it comes to the World Cup time. But there was, again, a real bravery in, I think it was late in that second half when Ryan went up at two and stole the ball, which was, you know, a very, very pressurized environment and you know, there's an element of risk involved in that, and it did remind me very much of Paul O'Connell, you know, and both for Ireland, but also for Munster. So many times where the opposition, you think it's, you know, it's late in the game or late in the half, and they're in a very good position, you know, 5 meters out. Everybody's thinking, team, stay down. We got to defend. We got to really stay on the ground and make sure that we don't let their rolling ball steamroll us. And next thing, he goes up and nicks the ball. And I thought that was, you know, another very impressive and important element of what Ireland were doing.
Gerry, what did you think of the match day atmosphere?
Ah, the match day atmosphere. I thought the crowd were a little slow to get into it because, again, the music is doing virtually right up till kickoff, and there's very little encouragement for the crowd to get involved before kickoff, and then they're just expected to. And then, of course, when there were any interludes, we have this new tactic now of playing music, which was pretty. It was pretty tedious, pretty irritating.
So like, that's sorry for people not at the game. That was during the match.
Yep,
they pipe in Fields about the Ryan and so on.
Yeah, in response to this campaign I did last season, you know what I mean. When I wrote a couple of articles, people got onto the RFU, I'm sure, of their own bad as well. But anyway, Kevin Potts took note and he said, right, we're going to do something. So I met Porrick Power last week, the chief commercial manager, and he said they're going to do three things. Number one, politely request through emails to all ticket holders, social media, and in one announcement during the game, please respect other supporters of the match by not continuing getting up and down, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Secondly, they were going to put in piped music at interludes and quiet spells during the match, which again is not going to encourage the crowd to sing at all. And a lot of people I know found it irritating. And thirdly, they're going to conduct a survey through a research company called Opinions. They're going to sample size about 1,000 spectators at the next three matches, the last one and the next two, and use their feedback to make any other amendments, like such as a drink-free zone. But they could go much further. They could still improve the MCs and pronounce them before the game. They could still encourage the crowd to sing a lot more. They could put on...
Sorry, you're saying encourage the crowd to sing, but that's literally what they're trying to do by piping in the music. And in fairness, that closing stand that last 3 minutes or so, was Fields of Attenright piped in then?
No.
So that was fans naturally, wasn't
it? Yeah.
Much better. Yeah.
The best two moments...
I was wondering had they reacted to...
No, it was twice the fact. That's what I mean about the crowd taking a while to get into it.
Mm.
Like... Shane and you and me and a lot of other purists would love the first half and we thought it was riveting. I met spectators afterwards and said they thought the first half was boring, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Some people just want tries. You know what I mean? That's what they want. They don't. And I thought it was actually better for the second half for having earned the right to score those.
But so what you're saying then is basically, for better or worse, fans react to what they're seeing, right?
Yep.
And it ends up being a really good atmosphere in the second half because Ireland starts scoring amazing tries against the best team in the world, the world champions. So what more can the IRFU do? You're saying that they can do a better job of encouraging people to sing, but they're trying to do that by piping music in.
Well,
so
for example, before the game, as in Paris, they put on brilliant pre-match entertainment, and then they, when they read out the teams, and they do it twice, they only give the Christian names of the French players, and the surnames are not pronounced, unless the 80,000, and of course the 80,000 French fans then shout out 23 surnames. So they're into it now. They're singing. At the Aviva Stadium, we announce the full names. We don't encourage the crowd to join in that process. Mm. That would be one way, just to engage them. They could definitely, like at the Munster Toulouse match, I wasn't at it, but Zombie's become quite an anthem now. I was in the pub on Friday night in Bald's Bridge, and when Zombie played, everybody just sings along the words. I think that's become almost a Munster rugby anthem. It could become an Irish rugby anthem.
A good song is always a good idea.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. I don't think playing Brown Eyed Girl midway through the second half really does it for me. I mean, really, at a rugby match.
Yeah. Was there any Black Eyed Peas? Black Eyed Peas always end up getting played at these things.
There wasn't, I don't think.
Okay,
but I wasn't writing down the playlist. But by all accounts, there seems to have been less traffic in the aisles and between spectators. It's become a real issue. Like, a lot of genuine rugby fans just cannot bear the Aviva experience anymore. Like, I wrote a piece about an 80-year-old man who counted the hit stand up 87 times during the game. I even got texts from people who said they had to stand up over 20 times on Saturday. There still seems to have been a bit of a
The only thing I'd say, Jerry, is that, and Shane, I'll put this to you, the IRFU need bums on seats, right? They need to cater for both Jerry's 80-year-old supporter and the people who want to, are just day trippers, just want to get pissed, want to have a few pints.
If you want to have a drink during the first or second half, have it in the concourse and watch the game on the screen. Don't bring it back to your seats.
Although I do remember Alan Quinlan writing a piece about that about 10 years ago and saying that was ruining the atmosphere as well. I don't know if that's going to add to the atmosphere, having a load of people standing in the concourse either. I think your articles have been really interesting and it's kind of got me thinking about it quite a lot. But it's still hard to think of the sort of silver bullet solution. Sorry, Shane.
I think we want to keep this idea of, you know, true rugby fans. I think that's a nonsense. I don't like it. I don't like that sort of language that's used. Anybody who's going to rugby, you know, not everybody can go to every game, you know, and sometimes maybe, you know, tickets are expensive as well. Maybe you can only go to one game a year, or maybe that's, you know, for lots of different reasons. Mm. So I think we should be encouraging people, to come to rugby as often as possible. But if there is once a year that they come to rugby games, then, you know, that's part of, you know, the broader support of Ireland as well. And I would hate anyone to feel, you know, discouraged or uncomfortable because they're, you know, not going to every rugby game, you know, throughout the season. I think there's elements of the experience that should be respected. The idea of getting up and down for, like, you know, pints the whole way through a game is, you know, fairly obnoxious actually, and it's not, you know, it should be discouraged, I think. But the key thing to atmosphere, and the atmosphere in the Aviva was excellent, really as good as I'd remembered for a long time. It did, you know, not to back in my day thing, but I did find those autumn internationals maybe the most atmospheric.
I loved them.
There's something about them, the lights are on and it was kind of warm, but, you know, but wintry as well. It was a big game and, you know, lots of investment from the fans. So there's a couple of things, you know, when Ireland plays something like South Africa, there is more trepidation, there's more anxiety within the crowd because it's likely to be close. And beating, I don't care what anyone says, probably beating a South Africa or an Australia or a New Zealand in the autumn there's a higher, you know, there's a greater desire for the fans to do that than maybe beat a, you know, a Scotland or a Wales or an Italy in a Six Nations. You know, I'm doing a disservice there, but that's just the perception.
No, that's it, Shane.
Easier, like, and that just should be happening. There's not the, you know, sort of trepidation that exists with these types of games. That in itself creates an atmosphere. You know, there's an anxiety of will we win, won't we win? That doesn't, there's a less of that exists even in the Six Nations, even though there's more importance in some ways with the Six Nations. And then, you know, a genuinely close game. And that's what we had with, you know, some spectacular moments. So ultimately, atmosphere comes down to the type of performance that we see with Ireland. And it's not exclusively just with Ireland either. Sometimes it's better for Ireland not to have the perfect performance where you actually beat the team by 30 points. Crowds don't want that either. They want a close game with big moments and some level of anxiety in case they think they're going to possibly lose the game. Yeah. That's hard to recreate. And, you know, from an IRFU perspective or from a coaching perspective, it's not always what you want. But you don't, you know, I don't think you can say if we do X, Y, and Z, this is the sort of, we're going to get the kind of atmosphere that we always want. Atmosphere changes on the day, the opposition, the time of match, and, you know, the way the game pans out.
I think, though, even in the Six Nations, like, there's been games against England that haven't generated a great atmosphere in recent
Honestly,
times.
Honestly, the atmosphere the in Scotland really game last year was
appalling.
Atrocious.
And that was, as bad as the Italy game.
And that was close for a while. We weren't playing very well, and therefore it was close.
But that didn't have the trepidation that Shane talks about, because everyone assumes we're going to beat
Ireland. But Ireland were going for a triple crown. Yeah, they still had a chance of winning the title. And it was the final Saturday, and I think it was a 5 o'clock or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And it was like a library. Yep. There was one attempt at the Fields of Athenry after about 62 minutes. Mm. Like the atmosphere at all three Six Nations games, and that's partly because there wasn't a sense of jeopardy, but I think it's got other, there are other factors at work here as well. And I'm not being rugby snobbish when I say true rugby fans, but I've been inundated with emails in WhatsApp groups from people directly telling me a lot of people who used to go to the Aviva are members of clubs, you know, support their problems, whatever else, are not going anymore because they just can't abide it.
Just on the I don't know if this is a compromise, but Eamon Finn tweeted us the other day asking why can't pints be, rather than everyone going back and forth, pints be delivered to the people who want the pints, almost like in baseball. Or apparently that happened in the World Cup in 2019. That was the way it was done.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Yeah. Beer
why can't we have taps beside every seat? why do we have to live in this, you know, what was it?
That would solve it, all right.
I felt like that was
problem solved.
That was pretty close to coming in towards the end of the Celtic Tiger days. I'd say we were close
but
to getting that.
I go to Croke Park matches. I've been lucky enough to get to a few All-Ireland finals.
Yeah.
And at halftime, everybody goes out to get a drink, but they've already got like 100 pints ready to go, or a couple of hundred. Mm. It's a very slick service at all the bars in Croke Park, and then you're not allowed to bring your drink back in for the second half, and nobody has to stand up. Everybody watches the game, and you get drink beforehand, half time, and after the game.
You think that would work? Because
of course it would work, but it won't happen.
But the IRFU, I've forgotten his name, the IRFU guy you spoke to,
Borick Power.
The different thing was they have rural crowds who drive home, which I don't think is I think that's a bit of a broad brush stroke in Croke Park. But that was the point he raised, that it's a different crowd.
Yeah, it's not apples and apples. Yeah, a different demographic, and it's a Sunday, so nobody's drinking. You could have fooled me. There's plenty of people drinking at All-Ireland finals. And the other idea that won't happen, because there's lots of loot and pints, and lots of lads want pints. So it's just, it ain't going to happen. And they've also got a 20-year deal with the
pouring rights.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So I think that's not going to happen. One of the other ideas, Pádraig Háirithe, was like, because it was based on the at the experience of studying the three Southern Hemisphere countries in the Rugby Championship, and very often, as was the case in all three tests in New Zealand, the MC would come on during the game and kind of, come on, All Blacks fans, get us in. And though, I said, Pádraig, that's because there's no atmosphere at the All Blacks games.
Really, yeah?
Never
They
was.
Are dreadful.
Even Never when was. They're doing well.
They don't have a song. They've got All Blacks, All Blacks, All Blacks, a chant, which they do once in a blue moon, and that's it. I remember at one point, one of the three tests, writing a note in of a score or something on my computer, and there was this big loud cheer, and I looked up, thought maybe All Blacks had just done something special or scored a try. It was a streaker, and it probably got the biggest cheer of the night.
Mm.
They're just not a very expressive audience, the All Blacks fans, and they don't, they're reserved and they don't have songs. So,
but it's also their expectation is that, you know, the All Blacks don't hardly go into any game where they think they're not going to win. It's hard to have
the winning percentage.
It's almost like people have too much money. You know, it's like, you know, how do you expect joy if your expectation is that you're going to win every single game, you're going to win the World Cup, you're going to win every Lions series that tours. You know, that's your minimum, expectation. That's your minimum level. So, you know, whereas I think we've gone through a bumpier road. We've less wins against, you know, these southern hemisphere nations. You know, it's definitely affected the atmosphere in the Six Nations because of a sustained period of success, which is probably, you know, about 20 years plus now for Ireland, a relative success in terms of, you know, success against Italy and Scotland and Wales in particular. You know, if you look at our win-loss record over that time, it's been, you know, hugely positive. So, you know, when people go to those games, the expectation is that Ireland are going to win. And even if there's a triple crown on the line, it's expectation that they're going to win that. That's not what floats people's boat anymore. You know, it's either sort of a Grand Slam game, or it's you know, France or England, or it's a game that is incredibly tight, where you've got jeopardy in it. And you know, again, it's hard for that to be created in every single game. It's just not. And maybe we do our best to, you know, we do our best to promote as much atmosphere as we can, but then savor the fact that, you know, these games of massive atmosphere are, you know, are precious too, and you know, not every game is one for the ages. But we were certainly lucky on Saturday that you know, anybody who was in that you know, at that match, you know, there, as you said, Jerry, maybe there's a couple, and I heard a couple as well saying we weren't great in the first half, which sort of made me laugh a bit. Yeah. Like I thought that atmosphere was fired up. It was excellent. The game was excellent. You know, if you had an experience of either going yourself or bringing, you know, a family to that game, you'd want to go again off it.
There's a big box contingent, but apart from them, I'd say everybody at the game went into the night happy. Even those that went a little bit early, and there was a good few of those for it, which I just can't fathom. But I never thought it was going to be a big problem for South Africa, given the billing of the match, given Ireland had just won a series against the All Blacks in New Zealand, given it was the first match of the season. If you think back to last November, the atmosphere was belting for the first game, also against the All Blacks. Mm. It always is against the All Blacks, and everybody's in their seats 15 minutes before kickoff, the one and only time, because of the haka. That's why I always say we should keep the haka. If it gets an Irish crowd seated 15 minutes before kickoff, it's got something positive going for it. Next Saturday will be very challenging. 1 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday against Fiji. It's going to feel a little bit like after the Lord Mayor's show. Saturday week will be very interesting. I don't remember an Irish match ever kicking off at 8 p.m. in the Aviva Stadium against Australia.
Yep.
And then the two Six Nations games are going to be England-France, where tickets are going to be like gold dust. So I don't think it's going to be as big a problem this season.
Jerry, on a quieter day, we would have asked you about Arsenal being top of the league, but
Yes.
It wasn't a quiet day. So
I actually took 2 hours out from my workload yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I just started to watch it. I'm sticking with this. Nothing much better, sweeter than beating Chelsea at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah,
to go back top of the table.
Yeah, nicely done. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Shane.
See you, man. Thanks,
cheers.
Phil. I lost.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake, I don't want to lose it.
They shouldn't interview you now.
Wait, I don't want to lose it. I'm fucked up.
I'm playing shit.
You get me in 10 minutes, I'll be all right. They shouldn't interview you now.
So I better go to go now. Or first I have some coaching questions.
It's too late now. What's that? Are you interviewing me or not? Seriously. Come on.
Is there an explanation for this? Is there an explanation for this?
You could be my mama and I'll be your boy.
Original road boy, never McCoy.
We know you as a very good dart player.
I'm not playing shit.
Fuck sake, I don't want to lose him.
But is there an explanation for that, or?
No, of course it's not. Of course it's not.
How do you prepare for the last match then?
These are the questions that you should be asking when we're live.
Oh, we're live now.
We're not live now.
Yeah, we're live. There you are on television. I'm serious. Yeah.
Why wasn't I told?
Sorry?
Should have been told.
Oh, I thought you know.
Well, do I prepare? I'll prepare the same. If I win, I win. I cannot keep playing like this. This is no good.
So at the end of this podcast, where are you psychologically? Are you feeling with regards to the World Cup?
I love that this is always a question. It's like
after every
Stephen Kenny's managerial reign, basically. Well, should he get the job or should he hold on to the job? Should we sack him? In the exact same way, every Ireland rugby game is seen through the prism of Why do we do this to ourselves?
From 2 years out, certainly. From the last 2 years on.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to...
Literally, it's been... For the last, I would say, 15 years, yeah. 16 years. It's been the exact same reaction to every Ireland rugby game. If we lose, then that's fine.
Too cocky, not confident enough.
If we lose, it's fine.
Let's lean into being favourites. Let's not be favourites.
But it's when we win that we have the complete crisis of confidence. Why?
It's true. Yeah, we're the only country in the world that has a crisis of confidence when we keep winning.
Yeah. Did the opponents really care about this game?
Look what winning did to us in 2018.
Yeah. That's the last thing we want to keep doing. We've really screwed up the World Cup build-up. We've won every game.
We should get carried away, is that what it is?
I think there's certain factors that we should gain confidence from and know that we can now do. The Maul defence, as we discussed there, against the very best Maul. The fact that James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne, who are an extremely light second row, not just against South Africa, but against France, against England, against even New Zealand, and that they stood up to that our reserve front row, Beelam had a great game. That's really encouraging, especially with Tadhg Furlong having ongoing ankle issues. But I think, honestly, it'll have almost no impact. I'm trying to override my brain's natural inclination to think about the last game and how well we played and how that might impact the World Cup. And I don't think it'll have any... it'll be a factor at all for South Africa in the next World Cup. They'll have a different out half. I think they'll have Lucanio Am back. I think they'll grow. They're a better team in a World Cup because they play a pressure game and there's more pressure in a World Cup. I think this matters more for Ireland and particularly our front five and our reserve front five, that they could match up to that for their self-confidence. But ultimately, so many things are going to happen between now and then. So many injuries. That last little bit of form, how you feel on the day, how you wake up, all those little tiny factors, way more of a factor than whether you beat South Africa a year ago.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact of the matter is that we're playing either France or New Zealand in the quarterfinals, the losers and or the winners and runners-up in our group. We should be playing the B team against South Africa in the pool stages. Because it doesn't matter, anyway. France, New Zealand...
Scots, Murph, Jerry reminded me about the Scots.
What about the Scots? Are we still talking about those guys? They still play international rugby, do they?
They're going to be at the World Cup.
Are you sure? They're definitely going to be there, aren't they?
They're in it to win it. Okay. As Phil Neville might say. Just lastly, any of the other games, probably most interest, England losing to Argentina.
Yeah, amazing. France beating Australia. And Argentina obviously beat New Zealand in New Zealand this year. Czech has done wonders since he took over. What I love about this is Eddie Jones is the most work obsessive, workaholic, rings his assistant coaches at 4 a.m. saying, I need that video on Billy Vunipola by 8 a.m. Piss off, Eddie. Also, you're losing all your games for the last few years. But the fact that Cheka beat him and Cheka was coaching Lebanon in the Rugby World Cup 2 days.
Oh, in the Rugby League. Yeah, he was doing that.
Yeah, 2 days before this game.
So what would have happened if Lebanon had won that match? Anyway, listen, that's...
Well, he said, Michael, he actually was interviewed in The Guardian and he said, it's actually quite easy to do both. It's just a matter of time management. When I'm with Argentina, I'm coaching them. When I'm with Lebanon, I'm coaching them. And there was a Huddersfield was one game, and then obviously London was the other one. So not even a massive train journey down. But I just love that Cheka
just comes down and beats.
Phoned it in a bit with both. Beats England in Twickenham.
Phoned it in to beat Eddie Jones at Twickenham. Absolutely unbelievable.
I'd say it's sitting well with Eddie Jones.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks, Murph.
Cheers.
Thank you, Onan. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you, Murph.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to sign up for daily ad-free podcasts on secondcaptains.com. And the Second Captains podcast is part of the Acast
Creator Network. Yes.
What those guys said.
Whose phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The Second Captains
World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.